The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Not having AD for a long period of time is something that we haven't had over the last year and a half. And now it's time for me to adjust again and see ways I can be even more effective to help this team win ball games. Because that is the sport that we're in. We're in the winning business, and I've always been a winner. So it's time to click into that.
All right, Stephen A., obviously the Lakers are without Anthony Davis. We're just hearing from LeBron. Do you think it's fair to ask LeBron to do even more?
Well, to me, yeah. And what I mean by that is that do more scoring, run the offense. That's it. I think it's necessary because the ball is in his hands. If he was a guy that was averaging 25 and 27 because you had a point guard and other leaders on the squad that were distributing you the basketball and your job was just to put up points, that would be different. But no, he's the point forward. He's the brains behind the operation. He's the ultimate, you know, orchestrator. And because that's the reality of the situation with any team that LeBron James on, but specifically this Los Angeles Lakers team, I don't think it's unfair to ask him to do more. It's not implying that he's not doing enough. It's not implying that he hasn't done enough. It's simply implying that with the absence of Anthony Davis, things have to change, and they can't possibly change unless LeBron James facilitates that change, whether it be continuing to get more of the right people involved, or when to insert himself and get himself even more involved, when to define or decide whether you're going to be assertive and aggressive or whether you're going to be passive at particular moments in the game, in the flow of the game. LeBron has to be the one to make that decision, because he's the only one capable of making that decision at the right moments, at the right times, and manipulating the circumstances to his extreme advantage and that of the Los Angeles Lakers. Only he can do that. Nobody else is a better option to pull that off than LeBron James. And because of that reality is why I say that he has to, you know, it's fair to ask him to step it up and to be more aggressive and what have you, because he's the orchestrator. He's the guy that pulls all the strings. That's all I mean by that. It's certainly not to imply that he hasn't done his part already.
I don't know what more LeBron James can do. I don't know what more we can expect from him. I mean, he's given you 26, more or less, 8-8 with a steal, shooting almost 37% from three, taking 7 threes a game, give or take. I'm just rounding up or down, depending on, you know, where the decimal point is there with those numbers. And he's also on a team that is elite defensively. Now, a lot of that has to do with AD, but as AD said, I mentioned it earlier in the show, Stephen A., he came on First Take last year and said, I challenged LeBron to perform at the defensive end when he got to the team. LeBron's been doing that too and has been leading a team that plays great defense and great offense. I don't know what else we could ask for him at the age of 36 in his millionth year in the league. Now, I'll say this. The danger in asking LeBron to do any more at his age, given the miles on him, because he's also playing 35 minutes a game, and he's not missing games, right? Remember at first when we weren't sure what was going on with AD, Stephen A., and you were critical, like, hey, if LeBron's playing, you're playing. I know that was before we understood the extent of the inflammation and or the Achilles tendinosis, right? Yep. But still, LeBron was playing, right? Second of back-to-backs on the road. LeBron's playing. He feels the responsibility not only to the Lakers but to the league. And he's playing on both ends of the floor. And he's playing given more minutes than anyone who's ever lived who's still this level of elite. Here's the disturbing thing. His efficiency numbers are the lowest they've been. His PER is the lowest it's been since his rookie year. It hasn't been this low since his rookie year. And at a certain point, there's a limit to what you can do physically. And obviously, they need LeBron to lead this team if they hope to win a championship this year, if they hope to go back to back. But so you want him to play offense, run the offense, of course, score, what, more play defense, lead. Also, he's figuring out in AD's absence, what can my team do, right? He finds Caruso in the corner, misses the shot. Caruso misses the shot. He's criticized. Oh, why is LeBron passing the ball with the game? I mean, the guy was open, so he passed the ball, right? So he's also dealing with the most scrutiny, the most pressure, the most minutes into his career, anyone who's ever played like this before, on a defending championship team. I don't know what else he can do. We can't. It's not fair to ask for more from him. He's doing everything.
It is totally fair. And it's fair because he has the power and the ability to dictate what he can and cannot do in most situations. You can. There's nothing wrong with asking. Demanding would be a problem because it implies he's not doing enough. But asking him if there's more that he could do, knowing that his greatness could peel something out of his hat, there's nothing wrong with asking him that, particularly with Dennis Schroeder out as well. And so we've got to remember that. Your point guard is out. Rondo is no longer a part of the team. Anthony Davis is out. And you're the point forward to begin with. When the ball is in your hands, usually good things happen. You're able to keep them in the game because of the decision making. We've raved about the fact that he's a master at finding mismatches. That's what he does. He holds on to the ball, he creates and discovers mismatches, and he exploits them. This is what he does. Never is it more important with him in a Laker uniform to do it. Not that Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder are out. So I don't have a problem with asking of it. If you demand it, it's a problem. But if you ask, there's nothing wrong with that.
No, what I'm saying is, I agree, right? Like, hey, LeBron, is there anything more he could do? I think he's already, like, this one goes to 11, right? Like, Spinal Tap, is this what, it's already at, it's at the highest it can go. I don't know.
So you say.
What more, what isn't he doing right now? He's on the ball a lot. He's defending. He's shooting the three.
I've watched
he's hooking
LeBron.
Up teammates.
I've watched LeBron. There are times, Max, that, you know what, because Anthony Davis and others are on the floor, there was no need for him to be as aggressive and assertive as we've seen him be in the past. But now that Anthony Davis is going to be out and Dennis Schroeder is out, you could see LeBron get a bit more aggressive offensively. Absolutely. There's always more he could do because he can pretty much do it all.
I mean, and then there's the obvious argument, which is if they want to make a deep playoff run again, I know like he's done it before. He's turned it on like last year, and then he's been able to perform in the playoffs better than anyone else. But every year is uncharted territory for LeBron James because no one's ever done this before. I don't know if I am a Lakers fan. As a Lakers fan, I don't want to see LeBron going all out in the middle of the season because of an AD injury. And then eventually, especially as I mentioned, those underlying efficiency numbers are the lowest they've been since he's a rookie. I mean, it indicates maybe finally some aging. I don't want him to get with all those deep playoff runs. He's in the Western Conference Finals now, puts the pedal to the metal, and there's not enough gas in the tank. I think what he discovered in Cleveland was he can't do the Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra intensity on both ends of the floor all through the season and then win the championship every year. Pick his spots.
He knows how to pick his spots particularly. Well, you could say he's doing that now, but you might be asked for him to do something a little bit more until Anthony Davis returns. And the thing that I marvel at as well is that, you know, Dennis Schroeder is out because of COVID-19 safety protocol measures, and we've had other players do that. You notice that LeBron hasn't missed a game because of that stuff? Somehow, some way, all of these guys, I mean, folks are missing games for a plethora of reasons. But the dude is 36 years of age in his 18th season, and he still is the most reliable dude, arguably, in the league. I think that people really need to look at that and then say to yourself, are you sure you can't ask him to do more? Somehow, some way, he's always figuring out a way to do more. So why not ask?
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Cam Newton got into a back and forth over his impending free agency initiated by a teenage player turned heckler at a regional 7-on-7 football tournament Sunday. Cam posted a video of the conversation that followed.
Please don't be one-dimensional. Like you said something to me, then I go, well, I'm really trying to talk to you. I'm not trying to like crack no jokes. I'm just really trying to ask a simple question. It's your fault why everybody's looking, but I'm really just trying to ask a question. But you never said what you did. You said you're going to see.
So there's that. Later on Sunday, the young man did apologize. Stephen A., what's your reaction to Cam's handling of that situation?
Well, I don't think that I appreciate the explanation that Cam came back and tried to provide to him. I don't think that he should have engaged in a back and forth with the kid at the start, because here's the reality of the situation. He's a kid, so I won't mention his name, although it's all over the web and social media and all of that stuff. But that kid should be ashamed of himself. If I was his parent, he would have been grounded. He would have been punished. I might have slapped him upside his head. I'm not gonna lie to you. That was a disgraceful, disgraceful display of behavior by that young kid. And let me put it in perspective for that young kid, who was a linebacker and a wide receiver at his college at this particular moment in time. I don't know whether he was 16 or 17 years of age. Cam Newton is an individual that has been in the National Football League for 10 years. He has played in 139 games, or 140. Outside of last season, where he was injured pretty much for all but two games, Cam Newton has missed a grand total of six games in 10 years, okay, with the exception of last season where he missed those 14 games. In one of the most violent sports, if not the most violent sport there is, playing the quarterback position, this man has been durable for the most part. He's a former league MVP. He guided the team to the Super Bowl. He's earned over $100 million in his professional career. And despite what he accomplished and what he has achieved in his life, this man, Cam Newton, decides to be one of the sponsors for several teams for a camp you showed up to help you and the kids that were there with you. And you would disrespect him like that? I mean, is it really that important? This is what I'm talking about. Now, so we understand that kids are kids, and we understand that kids are entitled to make mistakes. That's why I'm not mentioning his name. And we get all of that. But the level of disrespect that young kids show to their elders is one of the problems that we have existing in today's world. The late, great John Chaney, the coach at Temple University basketball, Max, used to tell me all the time, he despised what he called the microwave society. Everything is about now. And everybody wants now so badly that they don't want to toil through the terrain and put in the work and grind and do all of those kind of things. And they'll do anything to get to that point, to expedite the process and bypass and, you know, and go through whatever loops they need to go through to bypass the process. And this is one of the things that the guy did, because you're on camera and you're seen arguing with Cam Newton and everybody knows who you are. But you were disrespectful and it was uncalled for. And believe it or not, very ungrateful, because Cam Newton did not have to be there. He did not have to be sponsoring these events, but he did it for you. He did it for kids like you. And obviously his coaches and other adults, along with his parents, got to him, and props to him for apologizing. But I do think it takes a little bit of looking in the mirror to ask yourself what would get you to do that to begin with, because those same parents were there. Those same coaches were there. They taught you better than that. You knew better than that before you did it. You didn't care until somebody made you care. And that's a big problem that exists in our society today. And I think it's incredibly unfortunate that that kid was caught on camera acting that way. It's very unfortunate, but I'm glad he apologized.
Yeah, I feel sorry for kids nowadays. I feel sorry for kids growing up. You know, their brains are still developing. That's what the reason teenagers don't have good judgment is because literally that part of their brain is not developed. I mean, most adults don't have perfect judgment. No one has perfect judgment.
It's true.
But especially kids. And especially in a competitive situation at that age, man, I'm glad there weren't camera phones around when I was that age. And I think most people, if you're honest, would admit the same. So I had the same reaction as you, Stephen A. It's so offensive, the kid's attitude, right? You're like, what's the matter with you? But then I caught myself. Stephen A., shame is not useful here. I don't think the kid should be shamed. I'm sure he already feels some kind of shame, and I don't think it's helpful. I want to read his apology before I get to the. He said, I want to express my deepest apologies to Cam Newton and my entire organization and coaches for my actions. I did not intend for it to get as far as I did. I'd like to start by saying my parents never taught me to treat people disrespectfully. Like, he knows he messed up, and he was caught messing up. And by the way, Cam Newton had the same reaction any human being would when they hear that. At first, you get defensive for a second. So he starts talking about, I'm rich. And then it occurred to him, and I don't want to, like, blame Cam Newton for that either, because no one's perfect. And it occurred to him, oh, wait a minute, I'm talking to a kid. Okay. And then he says, he asked to speak to his parent. He doesn't even want to address him about it. He's like, I need to speak to your parent. That's the right thing to do. And then he pursued him afterwards saying, wait a minute. Well, you know, people are looking at us because of what you did, but he's trying to figure out where the kid's coming from. I think it's an unfortunate situation. It could be a teaching moment, a learning moment. I think that these kind of interactions happen to everybody throughout the course of their lives, and that I really don't envy teenagers and kids today coming up in this environment where so many of their mistakes are recorded for posterity. And I would even say, Stephen A., that after that first moment that wasn't so great from Cam, where he just got defensive, human nature, he quickly recovered and realized, wait a minute, this is a kid. I'm a mentor. And he assumed that role. I don't see any reason for shame here.
Well, I disagree with you respectfully only in this regard. I'm not saying we should shame the kid. I said he should be ashamed of himself. He should look in the mirror, in the privacy of his own thoughts, in his own head, in his own mind, even in his own home. You know better. And the point is that just like he's talking about his parents, the organization that he represents, etc. You know, basically what you're highlighting is that they taught you this. They taught you humility. They taught you sportsmanship. And they certainly taught you gratitude and appreciation for those who reach back to try to provide a helping hand. And for you to go at somebody that was literally there to help you. If Cam Newton never plays another football game, if he never does anything else in life in football, it doesn't take away from the reality that there are millions upon millions of kids aspiring to play the sport of football that can learn an awful lot from him. And that's the point that needs
to be made.
Stephen
A., real quick before we get out of here, may that be the worst thing that kid ever does. You know, we've all play the low light reel of anyone's life, the worst 20 moments. May that even make the top 20 for him. You know, we're all imperfect. We all mess up in ways that later on we're like, oh God, I don't even want to think about that. For this kid, that mess up is, you know, worldwide news. I feel bad for the kid right now.
But you're looking at the kid, and I'm asking you to take the bigger picture, to think about the millions of people who watch First Take, to think about the kids out there who will roll up on you in the street, who've rolled up on me in the street. That's the level of disrespect.
They can get your goat, too.
Wait a minute. Respect your elders. There's a certain kind of way. Like, if I saw my nephews or my daughters grow up and, you know, you talking to somebody that way, you're going to have a problem with Uncle Steve. You're going to have a problem with Daddy. Because guess what? You don't act that way. And so you're sending a message to the masses, not just for that kid, but for all of those kids out there. Stop looking for the elevator, take the stairs, be willing to work through the process, and be humble and respectful along the way, especially to those who are reaching back to give back to you.
Part of the teaching and learning process is being scolded at times. The kid deserved to be scolded. That's for sure.
No question. It's simple. You treat people the way you want to be treated, especially an authority figure and someone trying to do favors for you.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast.
Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
How about the Nets, fellas, going 5-0 on their West Coast road trip for those games without KD? Stephen A., did the Nets prove to you that they're the best team in the NBA?
To me, they have. I mean, I'm not ignoring what I'm seeing from the Utah Jazz, but I'm just not a believer in anybody outside of Donovan Mitchell at this particular moment in time, even though I love the defensive presence that both Rudy Gobert and Royce O'Neal has been giving them. Having said all of that, I look at the Los Angeles Lakers, and they were my favorites coming into the season because I assumed that Anthony Davis was healthy. It'd be one thing if he was just nicked and knacked and that was it. This is, you know, that calf injury, we're talking about an Achilles. Stuff sounds too similar to what KD, Kevin Durant, had to endure with him being out. It could be a month, it could be 2 months, it could be 3 months. We just don't know at this particular moment in time, and we certainly don't know if he'll ever be 100%. Here's what I'm willing to tell you. There is not one single team in the NBA that can be less than 100% and beat the Brooklyn Nets. Not one. Nobody. I mean, their offense is just lethal. I'm calling them Lethal Weapon 3, but I got to tell you something. When I look at Kyrie and the level of unselfishness that he is playing with right now in terms of getting other dudes involved and some of the things that some of the baskets he set up for other teammates, I'm looking at the great point guard play of James Harden. I'm fantasizing about what they'll be once KD comes back, assuming he comes back healthy. And if KD comes back healthy, I don't see how anybody can beat them because I don't think their defense is going to be as god-awful as it was earlier this season. And then not only that, I'm watching them get other people involved. TLC, Joe Harris, Jeff Green, and others. I'm watching them get other people involved, and I'm saying to myself, damn. You know what? Joe Harris is still getting some shots. Jeff Green is still getting some shots. TLC is still getting some shots. DeAndre Jordan has been a presence in the middle. We can't ignore it defensively, rebounding as well. I'm just looking at them potentially. And let me not forget Landry Shamet as well, who can shoot the rock. They can go 9 or 10 deep. And I look at it from that standpoint. Bruce Brown, can't forget about him either. I'm just looking at them and I'm saying, excuse me, who the hell's going to beat them? Because guess what? A lethal offense can make you tight once you're on offense because you know you have to be close to perfect because these guys are so unstoppable on the offensive end of the floor themselves. That can make you tight. That can alter and compromise what you're trying to do offensively as a result of it. And then you won't be as effective as you're supposed to be. Now, with the Clippers last night, minutes restriction. Listen, I love Ty Lue. He's a Coach of the Year candidate. I think he's doing a phenomenal job, and I'm very, very happy he got that job. But when he laughed at the reporter because, you know, this incredulous look because the reporter asked him about Paul George being out of the game. Look, man, minutes restrictions or not, you got to make sure Paul George is in the game around money time, particularly the way he was flowing last night. I thought that was a very legitimate question, and there was nothing to dismiss about that. But in the end, it didn't matter. The Brooklyn Nets are the best team in basketball at this particular moment in time. A month from now, 2 months from now, postseason time, we can revisit it. At this moment, the Brooklyn Nets are the best team in the world.
Yeah, I mean, look, if AD's not playing, I can't say the Lakers, right? But I'm assuming AD will play. They're taking precaution. They're going to be extremely careful with AD. And what I've seen from this Lakers team this season, when AD's on the floor, is basically a continuation of last season. They went wire to wire as the best team in the Western Conference. They gentlemen swept the entire Western Conference, 4-1, 4-1, 4, and then they didn't even get extended seven games in the finals. Now, let's take that team, clearly the best team in basketball, right? Like, listen to those facts. Did they get better or worse in the offseason? They got better. And they're the only team, when AD is healthy, that is absolutely elite on both ends of the floor, offense and defense. Now, we agree about Brooklyn's offense. I keep saying it. They're not already, they will certainly, clearly, and by far, be the best offense of all time by the end of this season. Just want to mention, the best offense, according to efficiency numbers, right, of all time, occurred last season, the Dallas Mavericks, and they were a good team. And Porzingis got hurt in that Clippers series, but they didn't come close to winning a championship. Because you also have to play defense. No team in the last 20 years has won a finals with a defense ranked under 11. And the Nets have been playing better defense. Harden's not wrong. He's like, we don't have to be amazing. We just have to be, you know, middle of the pack. He's right about that. But if they are, what I see is a clash of the Titans in the finals. Lakers, Clippers. And by the way, the win against the Clippers, no Paul George at the end of that game. And I know I, more than anyone, have been saying he has to prove it in the playoffs, Paul George. He looks like a man on a mission to me so far to try to prove that in the playoffs. Like, he's heard the criticism and he wants to do something about it. Stephen A., he dropped, what, 12 points in 5 minutes in the fourth quarter? And one thing you and I definitely agree upon is even if there's a minutes restriction, we don't have to be fanatical about it. If it's a game like that and a dude is hot and you need him for a couple minutes at the end of the game, going over your minutes restrictions by 90 seconds or 2 minutes ain't going to result in an injury, you know, knock wood. It's not, I don't believe that. And I think that that would have been the smart thing to do, but they didn't. And so the Nets won a game on a bad call on an offensive foul that shouldn't have been called on Kawhi Leonard. And without Paul George on the floor, they squeaked by a Clippers squad that also poses its own threats. I'd say the Nets are probably going to come out of the East. I can't say if AD's healthy, they're the best team in the world right now.
Well, I can. The way that they're looking, they've beaten everybody that matters right in front of them. Utah Jazz have been on a torrid stretch, winning like 19 of the last 20 or 20 of their last 21 games. Well, one of those losses was to the Brooklyn Nets by 34. You know, they've beaten everybody in their path, beating both L.A. teams, beating, you know, Golden State, beating Indiana, beat Boston, anybody that stands in their way. And the better the team is, the better Brooklyn plays against them. It seems like the teams that have the best shot are the teams that are stinking up the joint because they might play down to the competition feeling they could take a night off or whatever. But they get up, they rise to the occasion. And I just can't say enough about what I'm seeing from Kyrie and James Harden. They've been absolutely sensational. And Kevin Durant is not a subtraction. He's not a minus in any way because this brother could put up 30 on 15 or 16 shots. That's how lethal Kevin Durant is. That's how efficient he is.
The fact that they're doing it without KD is the key because, yeah, when AD gets back, the Lakers are different. But my God, when KD gets back, and if he gets back as himself, he's also a defensive force. And this year, even when he hasn't been, he's at least accepted the assignment. Who's the other team's best perimeter player? Fine, I'll guard him. So, yes, I do think if the Nets are healthy, they're going to get out of the East. I believe that, especially the way they've been playing defense recently, although the Sixers will have something to say about it. Lakers-Nets is the finals we all want to see. And I'm not convinced at this moment that the Nets win that series.
All right. Let's get to a team that used to know what it was like to be in the finals every year, and that would be the Warriors. So Draymond Green lost his cool, and it cost the Warriors the game with the Warriors up to 9.3 seconds left. Green picked up two technical fouls, was ejected for arguing the outcome of a jump ball. Then Terry Rozier hit an off-balance jumper as time expired to give the Hornets a 102-100 win Saturday night. Here's Steve Kerr on Draymond.
he crossed the line. That's the main thing. We love his passion and his energy, and we would not be the team we are without him. But that doesn't give him license to cross that line, and he knows that.
Max, do you have a problem with Draymond's ejection?
I do. I have a problem as it relates to Draymond, not the ejection. Let me explain. I always felt that the dynamic on the Warriors was a little bit off because Draymond's the heart and soul guy, and Draymond is a leader on that team. And Draymond's also the little bit of the crazy guy. I mean, to play defense the way he does, you got to be a little bit of that. And a lot of great teams have that guy with a little bit of a screw loose, right? And that guy can be a great contributor, as Draymond is, and a leader. But in the absence of another real alpha on the team that has that kind of personality, that could sometimes be a problem. Let me give you an example. In the Cavs' comeback win against the Warriors at Oracle, don't forget, that was a 73-win team. But also don't forget, Draymond was the best player on the floor until late in that game. He was about to win Finals MVP. Steph wasn't getting it done. Draymond was. But Draymond was also the guy, Stephen A., who you point to and say that the Cavs were given a gift by the league. They were given a stimulus package, you called it, when Draymond was suspended because he had so many technical fouls till that point. But remember why Draymond was suspended. Not only all the techs up to that point, because you say, okay, fine, now you're up to that point. No more techs, Dre. We can't lose you for a game. LeBron goaded him. LeBron kept his foot out, remember, and kind of tripped him a little bit. And that triggered Draymond. And if you, Stephen A., point to that as the reason they lost, then that's not just LeBron goading him, because you can't get the other guy to behave a certain way. He's got to lose impulse control in that moment. You know, I think about Dennis Rodman on the Bulls, Stephen A., who also has a little bit of a screw loose and was a great defensive player, a great player. And we saw it in The Last Dance. Dennis Rodman would fly off to Vegas in between finals games. And one year during the regular season, he was given 48 hours. Okay, go cut loose in Vegas and be back. And when he wasn't back, what happened? Michael Jordan got on a plane and went and got him, because that was Jordan's team. He was the best player. He was the heart and soul. He was the unquestioned leader. What he said went. That's not the dynamic on this Warriors team exactly. And in the past, Draymond's indiscretion in that moment cost them, Stephen A., according to you, a championship. So when I hear coach say he crossed the line, we love the energy, but he can't cross the line, alarm bells go off. Because in the past, he crossed the line and it cost them.
Well, I don't want to hear the example of the NBA Finals used, because I think the ultimate incentive is that Golden State won that game. It was a game four. They were about to close out Cleveland in game five, and the NBA gave LeBron James a stimulus package that's unrivaled as far as I'm concerned, and propelled them to a title, because ultimately Bogut and Iguodala would get hurt in game five. Iguodala was never the same that series. He was a defensive wizard, and it compromised their championship aspirations. That's my firm belief. I've never deviated from that, and I never will. Having said all of that, I do not disagree with you nor Steve Kerr with what you said. Draymond Green crossed the line. And the reason why he crossed the line is because you're up two. Your technical gave them two free throws, okay? All right, you got a double tech and you got ejected from the game. You compromised the game and the outcome for the Golden State Warriors. You simply can't do that. And then it gets to a point where what Draymond is going to have to recognize is the fact that officiating, even with advanced technology, even with the instant replay, even with the challenges and all of that stuff, it's still a relatively subjective business. They can get very subjective, and it's got to the point where Draymond is going to get himself and his team in trouble if he doesn't dial it back just a touch. We all love his passion. I think he's a basketball savant. You sit back and you talk basketball with Draymond Green, he knows what the hell he's talking about. I mean, he really, really does. But that's part of the problem, because he's so knowledgeable about the game of basketball and he knows it inside out. I've spoken to Tom Izzo about this, the great Tom Izzo, about this on several occasions, his coach at Michigan State. He knows, and Joe Lacob and other assistant coaches on the Golden State Warriors, they rave about the IQ of Draymond Green. Okay, well, here's the problem with that. Because you know so much and you're so knowledgeable and you can really pinpoint where the officiating has gone awry and it's gone wrong. You can't be quiet about it. You on top of them all the time. But they're human beings. And they can get to a point where they're sick and tired of your behind. And as a result, they're looking for a quick whistle on you. And it can compromise you. You being Draymond Green, you have to know that and you have to adjust. And I want to throw this at you, Max. When you brought up the Dennis Rodman thing with MJ, MJ was the unquestionable leader. Do you want me to tell you who I think gets let off the hook in all of this sometimes?
Steph.
I think it's Steph.
Yep, of course.
Because guess what? Let me tell you something right now. Even though Draymond Green loves and respects his teammates and all of that stuff, he's ready to go to war for any of them. If you watch his behavior on the court, there's no one he reveres more than Steph Curry. None. Nobody. All right? And a lot of times, it's Draymond setting up those shots for Steph. Steph's phenomenal movement without the basketball and stuff like that. But it's Draymond giving him those passes, instinctually knowing where to get it to him and enforcing other dudes to get Steph the ball. If there is one person that can get into Draymond's ear and be like, yo, bro, we need you. We can't have you doing this, man. Come, let's be cool about this. Let's handle this accordingly. And talk to Draymond Green in a manner that Draymond Green is embracing and accepting of whatever guidance they throw in his direction. It would be Steph Curry.
That's what I'm saying.
Far more than Steve Kerr.
Stephen A., this is what I'm saying about the dynamic on that team. Like, now, look, I know Draymond and Dennis Rodman aren't exactly the same player.
Not at all.
But of course, and Draymond has more diverse, and on the court, Draymond had more diverse offensive skills. But could you imagine a final series with the Bulls up against it and Dennis Rodman's about to be MVP of the finals with a Game 7 performance? It wouldn't have happened.
Never.
And right, of course. And when Rodman took a hideout for a second in Vegas, I mean, they went over this in The Last Dance. He's in the room with Carmen Electra, and she tells it from her point of view, and Michael Jordan busts in the room. He was coming back with Dennis Rodman.
Knocked on the door.
That is Michael Jordan, like, as the unquestioned alpha of that team. And I do think, you mentioned Steph by name, I do think that's the difference in the dynamic of this team. That Draymond is as much of a leader and a heart and soul guy as anyone on that team, including Steph. And by the way, in terms of his importance to the team, everyone talks Splash Brothers, respect to Klay Thompson, one of the all-time greats. But to me, if you had to boil that team down to two elements, not just Steph Curry, to me, the second element is Draymond. It's the pick and roll partner. It's the vocal leader. It's the defender. It's the guy who allows you
it's
to play
more
five
simpler
out.
Than that.
Those are the guys who he and Steph together revolutionized the game.
It's much more simpler than that. They love Steph Curry. It's impossible not to love him. One of the nicest guys you could ever meet in your life. They feared Jordan. Dennis Rodman, they didn't want to have to deal with Jordan. He won't have to deal with Jordan. The fact that Jordan didn't come to knock on his door to request him coming back.
Yes,
Jordan went to get him. Let's go.
So this is what I mean.
You understand what I'm saying? They were there. Steph Curry, he is loved. Michael Jordan was feared.
So this is what I mean. In the absence of a Michael Jordan type on this Warriors team, we've already seen Draymond lose impulse control. LeBron goaded him into it, but he lost it. And as a result, missed a finals game.
Shouldn't have been ejected.
Well, okay, whatever. But he did lose control. And did, I mean, the fact of the matter
he didn't get ejected that game. After the game, they sat up and counted against the previous transgressions.
Right. Okay, fine. You think LeBron wasn't aware of how many texts dude already,
Yeah, but LeBron, LeBron stepped over him and put his you-know-what on his head,
no
man.
No doubt. He was
I mean, you can't let that, this I mean, that, is, I mean the man rules alone should have had the officials leaving that alone. I mean, you can't do that.
That's my point. So
they knew
Draymond,
Cleveland was about to get sent home in five. That's what that was about.
Because Draymond is not playing with Michael Jordan, because he's not playing with someone like that, he has to rely on his own impulse control. So when you see coach say he got out of line and it cost them, that's a real thing and a real concern.
Yeah, we hear you, Dr. Phil. We hear you loud and clear. But in the end, what it comes down to is this. In the end, if you're Draymond Green, that shouldn't have cost you back in the day. But this particular situation now, your reputation is preceding you, and you're going to get more quick whistles
going Dr.
forward.
Phil.
And he got to be,
who are you?
He got to be mindful.
Who are you, Oprah?
You got to be mindful of that, period. No, I just talk common sense. I speak real people. I don't speak above them. I speak to them. There's a difference. Might want to take notes. Just a thought.
Oh, I understand what's being said. Yeah.
Right. Are we ready to carry on? I got some news for you fellas that I think you might want to react to. Obviously, the T-Wolves fired their head coach, Ryan Saunders. They hired Toronto Raptors assistant coach, Chris Finch, as a replacement. Stephen A., your thoughts on this move?
Listen, Chris Finch has been around for a long time. He was an assistant in Houston, started out his career as an assistant in Houston. The front office, Rojas at, in Minnesota, he was running Houston's operation right there. So obviously their relationship goes back a long way. I respect the fact that this man is given an opportunity. It's not like he didn't have any coaching experience whatsoever. But you know what I'm going to lament? I'm going to lament the fact that you know what? Clearly, there's no Rooney rule or a Bud Selig rule in play or anything like that. So this is a guy that's on the bench in Toronto during the season and is being hired as the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. You understand? So relationships clearly matter because obviously not enough black folks have that relationship. In a league that's 75 to 80% black with a plethora of coaches, I'm looking at guys like Lionel Hollins and even Phil Handy with the Los Angeles. I mean, every staff that Phil Handy ends up on, it seems they win a championship. What about him? I'm looking at Mike Brown in Golden State. What about him? I'm looking at Nate McMillan, who was a damn good head coach in Indiana. What about him? He's an assistant now. What about him? Melvin Gordon, what about him? The list goes on and on and on. I got a few names here. I see Sidney Lowe. I see Jacques Vaughn. I see Melvin Hunt. I see Mike Woodson. I see Tyrone Corbin. I see Tony Brown. I see Lionel Hollins, okay? I'm just looking at it, and I'm saying you've got a whole bunch of black coaches that have been around for a long time starving for an opportunity, a chance. And in the middle of the season, you get rid of Ryan Saunders, and you got a coach there already in play, okay? I'm just saying, damn. Credit to Kyrie Irving, Avery Bradley, and those boys who brought it up, who brought attention to the issue before play in the bubble where something needed to be addressed about black coaches getting looked at in the National Basketball Association. I applaud them for that. They deserve kudos for that. I'm going to keep doing it. Again, I'm paying attention to the process. There doesn't seem to be a definitive process that's followed when it comes to hiring these white coaches and bypassing these black coaches. Steve Kerr has been on the record speaking against this, along with various others. It's a damn shame that in the year 2021, we still have to talk about the unfairness and the practices of all of this. But Chris Finch, I cannot knock the fact that he's getting this opportunity. It's not like he's somebody that hasn't been around or has not paid some dues. I wish him nothing but the best. I can't condemn them for it. I'm just saying damn to the black coaches out there. Can't catch a break whatsoever.
I applaud you for doing this every time a coaching hire is made.
And it's David really Vanderpool as well in Portland. You know, he's another. Another guy, David Vanderpool. Yes.
Sure. It's a tough position to be in because frequently the hire is a competent hire. It happens to be a white guy, right? But you have to take a step back and look at it like, you know, what do those artists call Stephen A? They do the dots, you know, and then when you step back, you can see the picture. So each dot you put on, you're okay, that's plausible. And when you step back and see the picture, it's a very white picture. So I'm glad you bring it up and I got your back. I second that notion.
I appreciate that, Max. By the way, I think Vanderpool's in Minnesota now. Yeah, I think he's right there. Right.
I'll say this. This is what I started thinking. Karl Anthony Towns is, you know, when healthy, a tremendous player. But they have not won in Minnesota. And at a certain point, you're going to have to win because there are very few Damian Lillards in the world who say, no matter what, I'm staying here. And even Lillard, there was promise on the team. And I think every move you make in that franchise, if you really want to keep Karl Anthony Towns, you better be very careful. Get his input and try to put something around him that will entice him to stay. Because no matter what he says, people have a threshold for losing.
Max, I will say this real quick before we end this segment. Number one, Karl Anthony Towns does have to be on the court. I think over the last season and a half, he's only played like 45 games.
Right.
And we know he's been through a lot, and God bless him and his family with what COVID took from him in terms of losing his mama My heart goes out to him. He's been through a lot, but he's got to get on the court. So that's going to help because he's a terrific player when he's on the court. The other thing that I wanted to mention is this. You know, when we point to these coaches and what have you, you know, people misconstrue what I said when I talked about white privilege and I talked about Steve Nash getting the job with the Brooklyn Nets. Steve Nash is doing a hell of a job. He deserves a lot of credit. Mike D'Antoni is a brilliant offensive mind, and he deserves a lot of credit for the help that he's given him. I've got no issues with it. My issue wasn't about Steve Nash. My issue was about the fact that he never coached on any level. And the job he inherits, his first job in the business, is coaching Kyrie and KD and ultimately James Harden arriving in a trade. Black folks don't get those opportunities. And I remember when I reported that on First Take, everybody tried to misconstrue, and there's been plenty of coaches that were black that were given jobs without any coaching experience. I never said that didn't happen with black coaches. What I said was you didn't see black coaches getting those kind of jobs. If there's anything to celebrate today, is that the Minnesota Timberwolves stink and the default position wasn't to give a black coach that job, which is on a track to nowhere for the immediate future, even though I got faith that they ultimately get this ship steered in the right direction. But let me get to see a black man with no coaching
in experience Nash's case,
get a job with a contender as his first job and then come talk to me.
In Nash's case, that seemed like a relationship thing. Like he had
it
a,
is
good
a
relationship with the stars.
It is. It is. It is a relationship.
Do we have time to do the dunks? I want to do it. T-Wolves rookie Anthony Edwards unleashed one of the most unreal dunks you'll ever see on Friday. Wait for it. Oh, my goodness. All right, guys. That got us thinking. What's the best in-game dunk you've ever seen? Stephen A., you're up first.
I'm not going to use the word best. I'm just going to tell you my favorite. In the 80s, Dr. J, Julius Irvin with the cradle before dunking over Michael Cooper. Look at this right here. Oh, Lord have mercy. That was something special, right? Look at that cradle right there. The steal and then going full court with the cradle at the old Spectrum in Philadelphia. That was something. And then Michael Cooper seeing and then in mid-flight saying, oh, damn, let me dunk now. That was something that was spectacular. Here's Jordan against Mark Eaton. Look at this dunk right here. Oh, Lord have mercy. That wasn't the one, actually.
7'4".
There was a different one. Now, he's 7'4", but that wasn't the one I was talking about. There was another one from years earlier. I mean, when Jordan came flying from the left side and took off outside the paint and dunked on Mark Eaton. So that's
Stephen
two
A.
times he dunked
Stephen
on
A.
Go ahead, Matt.
This is just a photo, but Vince Carter jumping over Frederick Weiss in the Olympics. I know it's not an NBA game, but that was... You know, the Knicks drafted Frederick. I said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding? That was sick. And then my favorite of all time is John Starks left-handed dunk over Horace Grant and Michael Jordan. In the playoffs, Stephen A., they went up 2-0 to my recollection. I mean, that was it. They didn't win any more games. But you dunk on Jordan like that in the playoffs. But the most spectacular Vince, that was
Vince
ridiculous.
Carter. Vince Carter. Several. Ridiculous. There's several we could have picked for Vince Carter.
Yeah.
Several.
Yeah. The fans agree that it was Vince Carter, too. We asked everyone on social media. That was a lot of fun to end the show that way. Bye, guys. See you in the morning.